This episode of the Vision Board Podcast is brought to you by Onnit. Why Onnit, you ask? Well, here's a word from Onnit's founder and CEO, Aubrey Marcus.
You know, Onnit is the company that has the tools to improve your performance. And in whatever area that you're looking for, we have something to do it. You know, it's like going to it's the Home Depot of house repair, but instead of house repair, it's body and mind repair. You know, and it's body and mind performance enhancement. It's going to that body shop and figuring out what tools that you can apply to help make your life better.
At the Vision Board Podcast, we only promote supplements that we use ourselves, and we only use the best. To give you insights, here's Johnny.
Yeah, guys, my two favorite that I take, one, Alpha Brain. Alpha Brain really helps improve mental focus and memory, and the second one I really swear by is Shroom Tech. Shroom Tech is designed to help your body with energy and cardiovascular endurance. What's your favorite, Tristan?
Johnny, the two that I love is the Warrior Buffalo Bars. I find these delicious snacks, and they're also perfect for when I'm on the road and also on the run. Also, I love the Dolce Whey. They're grass-fed whey protein isolate, perfect for my smoothies and also my post-workout shakes. Now, guys, check out the range at www.onnit.com, and please use code word VISIONBOARD for 10% off at checkout. Now, guys, enjoy the show.
Ladies and gentlemen, today is the first day of the rest of your life. And now, listen in as Tristan and Johnny bring it all to the table on the Vision Board Podcast.
Guys, welcome back. We're up to episode 114 of the Vision Board Podcast. I'm Tristan Canal. We'll start again. Guys, welcome back. Episode 114 of the Vision Board Podcast. I'm Tristan Cannell. Alongside me, Johnny Stofko.
What's up, Tristan? What's up, everyone? Episode 114. What are we bringing to the table, young man?
We've got Mark Manson in the house, man. A great author. He's doing a lot of things in relationships. He's a New York Times best-selling author and someone we followed for quite a while.
Yeah, you know, both of us really enjoy these interviews, talking to writers, expressing themselves on paper. And his story is really remarkable, too. And it'll be good to get an insider look on that whole process of what it takes to be a publishing author.
Yeah, man. He's got a tremendous blog, too, with a diverse range of different topics. The other day, I read one about Pat Riley. And Pat Riley was just speaking about what happens to a team once they win a championship. So interesting to just get his perspective on that as well.
Yeah, guys. And for the ones who don't know Mark Manson, he's pretty much the relationship guy. So he's done some work on, the goings on and out, beginnings and ends to our intimate relationships.
Yeah, we had a few for all us single guys, even people in relationships, you know, us young people trying to find our way in life.
We're not that young.
There's a lot of there's a lot of different questions that me and Johnny had for him. So there's a lot of advice if there's something that you're struggling with. I think we all struggle with relationships at one time in our lives. No one's perfect. So it's a great one that we get to pick the brains of someone that actually has put things down in writing and done a lot of research on the actual topic.
That's it, man, because we all have an opinion. We all have a story, but he's the guy who's taken that opinion, taken that story, taken his life experience, put it on paper, and actually been brave enough to share it with everyone. So love him or hate him, very insightful, very educated dude, and we're stoked to bring him on the show.
Hell yeah, guys. But a big thank you to everyone else supporting the show, sending us messages on support on social media, emails. So, you know, tag us in your posts and, you know, send us emails. We love to interact with everyone out there, and we really respect all that support that you've given us.
Yeah, everyone who's been with us since day one, all of our new fans, Tristan and I, once were able to just thank everybody in a quick little shout, two or three people, but lately it's been more and more. So everyone listening at home, man, we really appreciate the feedback. We really appreciate the support, and it means a lot for Tristan and I and the show.
Yeah, so just keep spreading the words. Just remember to tell people you can subscribe for free via iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher. And for those on iTunes, if you can, just have a little bit of time. You know, just please leave us a 5-star review. Helps us really grow as a show and reach more people as well.
So. Yeah, well said, man. Other than that, let's bring this dude on.
Okay, let's get to Mark Manson, oh, man. All right, our special guest is Mark Manson. Mark is an American self-help author, blogger, and entrepreneur. He is a New York Times best-selling author. He has two books, The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck, and also Models, Attract Women Through Honesty. We welcome Mark Manson. Mark, welcome to the show, man.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Mark, thanks a lot for stopping by the show. Let's start this off by sharing some insight on your next work. I saw you recently posted about books you were reading to collect data and get some information. How's that process going?
It's going pretty well. My last book came out this past September, Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck, and I'm like between books at the moment, but the next book is going to be a relationships book. So I went out and bought a massive stack of like 15 or 20 relationship books and have been kind of nerding out and going through them every few days.
Through your past experiences and like Tristan and myself just overall over the years dating, what's your honest opinion about the idea that getting into a relationship is the best way to go moving forward with, you know, that type of system of dating?
What do you mean specifically?
I just feel that sometimes that's one of those things, like being in a relationship is like a comfort zone for most people. So they'll get in and out of them just to be in one rather than really focus on what they really want to do. So coming from a guy who's, you know, researching and reading about going to write a book on relationships, what's your opinion on, do you think that it's a necessity?
I think intimacy is a necessity in life, not necessarily a romantic relationship. I think a romantic relationship is one of the most efficient ways to get our need for intimacy met. But it's pretty interesting if you look at the research, what you were just saying about comfort zone. You know, you have some people are kind of serial monogamous, which is like they're never single for more than 2 weeks. And because anytime they're single, there's like this real fear and anxiety of like, oh my God, what if I'm going to be alone forever? Or what if I'm going to die alone? And so they kind of just desperately jump into the first relationship opportunity that presents itself. And that causes all sorts of problems. But interestingly, there's people also on the other side of the spectrum, which is their comfort zone is being single. And so anytime somebody tries to get close to them or tries to start a serious relationship with them, they start freaking out and they're like, oh, I'm going to lose my autonomy, my individuality, and my life's going to go to shit. I'm going to be miserable, one of these married miserable people. And so they avoid relationships and they kind of like, or they sabotage their own relationships so that they kind of perpetually end up being single.
Mark, with the new book, is it a lot of your own experiences in there? Or like I know you said you were doing a lot of research. What's the mix that you've put into that?
It's still pretty early at this point, you know, like I'm still outlining it. So I have a vague sense of what it's going to look like, but the nature of writing a book is like you get halfway into it and you're like, oh, like half of what I just wrote is shit. So yeah. I'm going to like scrap it and do this other thing. But generally my approach to my work is I use the research as kind of like a foundation. Like a lot of people who read my work don't even realize I do research. Like I get emails all the time, people saying like, wow, man, you're so smart. How'd you know this? And it's like, well, I study stuff. So like, but I basically use the research as a foundation to kind of just know like what good advice is, like what people need to hear and like what is helpful for people. And then when I actually sit down and write, I use a lot of my own life experiences to illustrate those ideas. And then a lot of stories and stuff from people I know or historical figures and things like that.
With the Subtle Art, you know, your last one, was it a difficult decision or was it an easy one to throw the word fuck in the title? Was this someone like an advisor told you to use it, or was it just your instinct of like literally not giving a fuck about it?
It's funny. It was, so my agent was like a huge proponent of it. Like I originally wasn't going to call the book that. I was going to call it Happiness Is Not Enough. And my agent was like, hey, you have that article called The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck. She's like, you should make that the title of the book. And I was like, but the book has nothing to do with giving fucks. And she's like, okay, rewrite it. Make it about giving fucks. And so when we were like pitching publishers about it, we actually offered both of the titles. We said we could do it one way or the other depending on how you feel. And some publishers were actually pretty, they they definitely wanted to stay away from it. And then the other publishers were like really enthusiastic about it. And then my editor at Harper, who I ended up working with, he's like this like dirty North Englishman who like has like a filthy potty mouth. Like he curses more than I do. And he's like, we're totally going to put fuck in the title. You know that, right? And I'm like, all right, sounds good to me. I'm like, if you guys are willing to deal with like the blowback and the PR headaches and stuff, like go for it, you know?
Mark, in a recent interview, we asked Robert Greene what his intent was for his pieces of work. And he said he was just had an obsession since a young age of, you know, researching and understanding nonverbal communication. With your past work and current and future pieces of work, what do you have a specific intent of why you're writing or a specific audience you're writing to?
I often describe my work as like a very public form of therapy. So like I'm everything that I write about, all like the life issues and the struggles and things, you know, that people are trying to change or improve about themselves. The reason I'm writing about it is because they're things that I am either struggling with right now or that I've struggled with recently myself. And so a lot of it, you know, a lot of people email me and they're like, oh, well, what makes you so smart? Like, why are you the expert? And I'm like, I'm not really the expert. Like, it's just that this was fucking my life up too. So I went out and tried to figure it out, and writing about it is kind of like a therapeutic process for me to kind of digest my own life experiences and understandings. And it just so happens that I do it in a way that other people can get a lot out of it as well.
Mark, without giving too much away, because we obviously want people to buy the book, is there a couple of maybe unusual things in the book that you can give insights into? Something, you know, just away from the normal standard things that you can kind of share with our audience?
Oh, yeah. Well, the subtitle of the book is It's Subtle Art Not Giving a Fuck, A Counterintuitive Approach to Living a Good Life. And, I mean, if you just look at the chapter titles itself, I think chapter two is called Happiness is a Problem. Chapter one is called Don't Try. Chapter two is called Happiness is a Problem. Chapter three is called You're Not Special. There's a chapter called The Importance of Saying No. There's a chapter, the last chapter of the book is called And Then You Die. So, I mean, the whole kind of philosophy of the book is like, hey, all these negative things in your life that you've been avoiding, all these ideas in your life that you've been avoiding for so long and trying to cover up, like, let's talk about it. You know, like, let's talk about the fact that you may not actually be special. Like, let's talk about that rejection and being told no and saying no to other people is really important. Like, let's talk about the value of suffering, like how important struggle is for like building a meaningful life.
Actually, let's talk about that in terms of like saying no. I'm sure that as your profile's risen over the last 2 or 3 years, I'm sure that that's probably something that you've had to come through. How do you sort through the yeses and no's in your life?
It's hard, right? Like, I think, so again, this kind of comes back, it's kind of like, it's a similar thing to like the relationship thing, the monogamy thing, the serial monogamy thing we were talking about earlier. Like, I think there are two types of people. There are people who are really bad at saying no to other people. Mm. Like, they're very, very uncomfortable, like, creating any sort of conflict or you know, maybe confronting people. And then there are people that are very, very bad at hearing no from others, like accepting critical feedback or maybe like a little bit of negativity. And the argument I make is that it's important to be able to do both. Because if you're not able to hear no, then you're just going to be like totally up your own ass and self-absorbed and think, you know, everything you do is amazing. Like, kind of one of the key definitions of narcissism is somebody who like refuses to accept or believe any like criticism about himself. And on the flip side, anybody who's like not able to say no to others, they're basically going to feel like they're living their life for other people, that they're like not actually in control of their own destiny or in control of their own decision making, because they're always trying to please other people around them. So it's important to develop the ability to, like, have no's in your life. Like, no's are healthy. No's, like, differentiate, like, what's important to you, what matters. And especially once you get older and you have, like, all sorts of commitments and stuff, like, it's important to manage those commitments by, like, putting your foot down and saying, like, I don't have time for that, or nope, that's not important to me, I'm not going to do it.
With all of your research into relationships, what do you feel is, if you had to pick one, I know it's hard to generalize, but what makes relationships so difficult? Because, you know, initially people, they think they're in love, it's probably just an attraction, and then you realize as time goes, I'm trying to not sound cynical here, you realize as time goes, if you're with this person for a significant amount, you might not even have anything in common. And then there really isn't any boundaries for that relationship to even grow. What do you feel is like a really common reason why a lot of relationships fail?
I think the reason most relationships fail is, well, there's two reasons, I think. And there's like, so there's a healthy reason why they fail, and there's an unhealthy reason why they fail. The healthy reason why a relationship fails is just two people simply grow apart. They grow in different directions. Their values change, and suddenly they look at each other and they're like, this doesn't really make sense anymore. And that's still painful, but it's at least it's amicable, and people, you know, they can move on with their lives and maybe maintain a friendship or something. The unhealthy reason that relationships fail is that a lot of people go into the relationship not because they actually love the other person. They're trying to fix something about themselves. So they have some sort of like deep-seated insecurity in themselves, some area of their life where they don't feel worthy, and they find somebody who may like compensates for that. You know, so somebody who, let's say, you know, like a guy who like chronically feels like he's like not attractive, or that he needs to impress everybody around him, and so he goes and finds like kind of a trophy girlfriend, or a woman who, you know, is like really materialistic. And so she finds like some rich guy who's going to spoil her or something. Like, those are really cliched, but honest examples of like people who enter the relationship for the wrong reason, like enter it based on insecurity. And it's basically a ticking time bomb, because nobody can fix your insecurities for you. Nobody can like make you feel good about yourself. All they can do is kind of just cover it up a little bit. And what eventually happens is these people become very, very dissatisfied and resentful towards the other person, because they're like, well, shit, I've spent the last 5 years with you, and you're not making me happy anymore. And the whole reason I'm here is because you're supposed to make me happy. And then the relationship just kind of explodes in like a big mushroom cloud of drama and broken silk china plates.
Mark, just sticking on relationships, over the last 12 months, what's the biggest thing you've learned in relationships? And it doesn't have to be anything in regards to a female or sexual relationship like that. It could be a business relationship. What's the biggest lesson that you've learned over this last 12 months?
The biggest lesson for me recently is, you know, I had a pretty kind of a strained relationship with my parents for a long time, and I feel like that has healed a lot the last couple of years. And I think the thing I've learned is that at some point you just kind of have to accept the imperfections. You know, I think there's a part of us as growing up as children, like we want our parents to be a certain way and we see the potential for them to be a certain way, but once you're an adult, you kind of have to just be like, you know what, this is who they are, and I can either accept it or I can just continue to like be miserable with them for the next decade. And finally kind of just surrendering to that was like a big step for me, and just like having better family relationships.
Mark, when I was younger, I actually wish I read as much as I did when I was a kid, and I was really into these books, detective books, Encyclopedia Brown. I think I read all of them when I was like 9 or 10. When you were a younger dude, when you were, you know, 9, 10, 11, were you reading? And if so, what were you reading?
I was reading, at that age, I was reading kind of like sci-fi fantasy stuff. Like young adult, like kids sci-fi fantasy stuff. And then I really got into like philosophy and like psychology in high school and started reading books by like, you know, Nietzsche and Camus and all this like kind of stuff. I didn't understand half of it, but I started reading it.
Did you ever read much Stephen King?
I did when I was young. Yeah, I read a lot of them.
Did you ever run across that one of his first ones, the one he wrote on writing?
Yeah, I went back and read that again like 3 or 4 years ago. It's a really good book.
Yeah, I think it's one most people. It was given to me as a friend, and I was wondering if the question I guess would be: do you have, looking back, you know, before you were a published author, was there a specific writer, author that you attach yourself to or that you admire, that you really like their work?
I went through a phase when I was like 19 or 20. I became a huge Ken Wilber fan. Ken Wilber is this like, he's a philosopher, but he's like also in like spirituality, kind of new age self-help type stuff. I just became obsessed with him. His whole thing is he tries to like create a theory that explains everything.
Yeah, it sounds like Alan Watts.
Yeah, and actually Wilber was really influenced by Watts and came from like a similar Zen background. But I was huge in that. He has like 20 books. I think I read all of them in like 2 years. But yeah, I'm not so into him anymore. I actually wrote an article about him on my site, but he was like a fascinating guy.
Hey, Mark, you've got a degree in finance from Boston University, right?
International business, but international, yeah, I worked business. In finance for a little while.
Awesome. What made you select that, given, you know, now, you know, you're a great writer, you know, what you've just told me and Johnny about your childhood and the things that you were reading. Yeah. What made you choose that kind of finance path?
Well, it's funny because I grew up not thinking I grew up thinking I was not a good writer. Because I didn't make good grades in writing classes, mainly because I think I deviated from the assignment too much. And so teachers gave me bad grades. So I was like, oh, I guess I'm a bad writer, which is really ironic because the thing that actually makes you a successful writer is that you deviate from what everybody else is writing about. By the time I hit college, I was like, oh, I'm not very good at that, but I was really good with numbers and like I played a lot of poker. So I was good with like probabilities and percentages and stuff like that. And I went to school, I was in downtown Boston. So it was kind of like, there were a lot of people who wanted to go into finance, at my school. And so I was like, oh, well, if you're good at numbers and you live in Boston, like you want to make a shitload of money, like go into finance. And, I got a job in an investment bank and within two months I quit. Cause I was like so miserable there, but, I really didn't, the writing thing, it took me, I had started a couple of internet businesses online and I was blogging as like an SEO strategy to like get traffic. I'd been doing it for like 2 years. And when I finally I started getting emails from people and they're like, dude, you're an amazing writer. And I was like, really? Oh, I guess I should do more of this. So it was like a very accidental discovery for me.
What's up, guys? Be sure to pick up your free copy of Conversations with Champions. This is our free ebook, which is comprised of inspirational quotes from past guests that we've had on the show.
Get inspirational quotes from champions such as Evander Holyfield, Jonathan Thurston, Grant Cardone, Gary Vee, Larry Holmes, Mario Andretti, Anthony Mundine, Joe DeFranco, and many, many more.
To pick up your free copy now, just simply go to our website, www.divisionboardpodcast.com/ebook. Put your name and email in the slot. It takes about 10 seconds, and we'll send you the book directly to your inbox. Now back to the show. Yeah, while we were off air, Tris and I were talking about how the way you produce your content on social media, it's really efficient, it's really easy, accessible, and your blogs that you put up, one specific one that I want to talk to you about is the one you did, the 6 toxic relationship habits that most people think they're normal. You know, without outlining each one, you know, the scorecard one was really, every point that you made, it seemed like, wow, this is, everybody probably could relate to that, but nobody talks about that. when you title it most people think are normal, were you collecting data with your friends, or is most people things that you learned through your own experience when you were comprising that article?
You know, the whole most people, there's a little bit of marketing in there. You know, it's like when you say like most people think this is normal, you know, everybody who sees it on Facebook is going to immediately think like, oh, that's probably me. I should click on this and listen to it or read it. But it's basically like, so I, for the last 3 or 4 years, like I get an avalanche of reader email. You know, I write about life problems, like very intimate personal life issues. And so I get tons and tons of email every week from readers. And you start to notice, like, these people kind of pour their heart out in these emails. And so you start to notice these commonalities, like these assumptions that everybody seems to have. And a lot of those end up being inspirations for articles. And then this is a perfect example. It's like, this is basically six things, like all these emails I'm getting about relationship problems or people who are miserable in their relationships. They're like, I'm seeing these same five or six problems over and over again. And so I just kind of like compiled them into a nice little listicle.
Hey, Mark, what is your day typically look like? Do you set aside time for just writing? Can you just give a few insights into that?
My day is pretty lax, actually. I wake up usually like 9:30 or 10, go to the gym. I only write. I'm not one of these people who like sets aside like, okay, I'm going to write an hour every single day. It's more like I write what I need to. So I write, you know, whenever I'm going to do a post for the blog, I do a post every other week. So usually I'll start writing on Monday, and then 90% of the time it's ready to post by Thursday, but sometimes it ends up going up on Friday. And then the only time I have like a really consistent habit is when I'm writing a book. And that is kind of your more classic, like, okay, wake up around the same time, block out the first 2 hours of the day for like only writing, and get as much done as I can, and then kind of move on to like more typical business stuff like email and taxes and crap like that.
Yeah. With the blog, was there a breakthrough article that took it from, you know, just say just a handful of people reading it to, you know, obviously today, I'm sure that you've got thousands and maybe hundreds of thousands reading your blog on a weekly basis.
Yeah. I had a series of kind of viral hits starting back end of like 2012, 2013. The first one was actually, it was political. It wasn't even about personal development. It was called 10 Things Most Americans Don't Know About America, which, as you can imagine, I got lovely, lovely emails from that one.
could you share some of those with us? Because it's interesting. I didn't read that one.
Oh, the bullet points from the article?
Yeah. If you can remember.
Let me see. It's been a long time. Number one is few people are impressed by us. Number two is few people hate us. Number three, we know nothing about the rest of the world. Four, we're poor at expressing gratitude and affection. The quality of life for the average American is not that great. You know what's funny, too, is I actually got a long email from an Aussie. You guys will appreciate this. Like this article, it went everywhere. I think it got shared like 200,000 times or something. And it was amazing because within the US, it was very mixed. So like about half the emails were like, yeah, man, keep on preaching it. Like people need to hear this. And then the other half was like, go kill yourself. Like,
we condemn you.
Yeah. And then, but it was funny. A lot of foreigners wrote in saying like, thank you, thank you, thank you for like finally saying like what everybody else has been thinking. But it was funny. I got an email from an Aussie and he was like, yeah, he was meant specifically about this point. Number five, the quality of life isn't that great. He was like, yeah, I moved to the U.S. to like do like a study abroad, and he was like, I was like so excited because I, you know, I saw movies and everything, and like he like went and did it like some like random city, and he was like, I was stunned, like I couldn't believe it, you know, like how many homeless people there were, like how many, like how unhealthy people were, like how many people were broke all the time. He was like, this is like. He said I would try to tell my American friends that that was not normal, and they like didn't know what I was talking about.
Yeah, were you living in Brazil or post Brazil when you wrote that?
I was actually living in Colombia when I wrote this.
Yeah, it's something that I've been in Australia for 3 years, and every time I come back to visit my family, it's always really difficult to even attempt to communicate that having a passport is normal. Like,
yeah,
like we equate. I guess I used to like equate having a passport with like wealth, but looking back since I moved to Australia and realized I'm, you know, everybody travels. Like the Aussie way is to work and then take a holiday for like 5-6 weeks out of the year. That's a big generalization, but I hear it quite often. Mm. And in America, and Tristan could, you know, highlight that point. He's traveled. We went to America in June, Tristan and I, for the show, and we went to 5 cities, and Tristan had been to more of the cities than I had been. And I'm from there. and it was one of those things that, I think the mindset is we're American. We don't need to travel.
Yeah.
It's pretty fascinating how important traveling is to your own growth.
Hmm. Yeah. It's something like 2/3 of Americans don't even have a passport, which is
it's crazy. Yeah. Do you feel that your work and, you know, how it continues to evolve, you could relate it to your experiences abroad?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. My experiences abroad have been a huge influence. And I've written probably like half a dozen articles, maybe 8 or 10 articles that are directly influenced by my time living in different places. Because yeah, it's had a huge effect on me.
How about the women that you date? Do you find it, if you've dated somebody from another country and then gone back to dating an American woman, are there any like parallels and differences you see in that?
Yeah, it's interesting because dating people from different cultures, it really highlights different values, like cultural values. So like you know, in some cultures, like women and men, like people are way more affectionate, like they share their emotions like very openly, and so you get to see the good side of that. You're like, wow, I'm like dating somebody who's just like so affectionate and sweet and saying all these nice things all the time. Whereas in the US, there's people are a little bit more guarded, or you know, there's a lot of sarcasm or teasing, or people like hint at certain things. But then you see the flip side, which is like in a different culture, like because they're so open with their emotions, like they don't handle adversity very well. Like they're very like dramatic and freak out over a bunch of things. And then it makes you kind of appreciate in the US, like we tend to be kind of stoic about stuff. Like I think Anglo cultures in general have like a cultural norm of like just shut up and like deal with it, you know, like don't stop complaining, basically, yeah. which is also interesting. Also has its like pluses and negatives. So it's like a fascinating way to kind of learn about the world and how different people, different cultures like see the world.
Take Brazil out, Mark. What other destinations have you learned the most in?
So I spent most of my time in Latin America, in a number of different countries, but I spent a significant amount of time in Asia, particularly Southeast Asia. That's pretty mind-blowing.
Where'd you go there?
Mostly Thailand and Vietnam, but, nice. You know, went all over, you know, Malaysia, Singapore, Philippines.
Did you get a bit of a culture shock?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, the biggest culture shock, the two places that I've been that, like, the biggest culture shock, and it's, I can't, culture shock, I would say India. India was, like, it felt like I was on a different planet, especially, like, if you get out into, like, rural India or, like, kind of, like, out in the outskirts of the cities, like, some of the slums and stuff, like, you feel like you're on a different planet. And then, went to Tanzania, like rural Africa, and like that's mind blowing. Like it's a whole different world over there.
It's that poverty, isn't it? And then it just, I don't know, it's something, because I went to Vietnam recently, and that poverty and just, I don't know, the self-enlightenment just about how lucky we've got it in life compared to them. And it's just, you know, they didn't choose to be like that, but they're so happy, some of them, and it's just amazing.
Yeah, it's really amazing how resilient humans are. You know, like, that's one lesson I definitely took away, is that, like, you know, the human mind and the body is, like, incredibly resilient. And it's not just in terms of, like, can we deal with physical hardship, but, like, we adjust. Like, you can be happy, like, living in a shack next to an open sewage pipe, you know, like, people do it. And so I think it kind of gives you perspective on, like, a lot of the quote unquote first world problems that we deal with. Like, you know, maybe it's not that we can't deal with it. Maybe it's just we're choosing not to.
When you were traveling, are you doing this with a partner? Are you doing this for inspiration? Are you doing this for life experience? Is there an intent behind your travel, or do you just go?
So I traveled. I lived nomadically for about 7 years. I would kind of break it up into, like, I would break it up into, like, sections. The first couple of years, it was just purely to, like, explore. Like, I just wanted to see different places, experience different places. The next couple of years, I was very intent on, like, partying my ass off. I had, like, very specific kind of epic trips that I wanted to do. And then the last couple of years, and then I met she's my wife now, but I met my girlfriend at the time, and, like, she quit her job, and we decided to travel together for the last 2 or 3 years. And so we did that together.
So what's next on the list? I know you're living in New York. Is that going to be a permanent base for a while?
Yeah, basically settled here now. Still doing a lot of trips, but, you know, it's, like, kind of the more classic vacation type trips, which is nice. I loved being nomadic, but it's one of those things, like, I'm really glad I started doing it, and I'm also really glad I stopped doing it, you know?
All right, Mark, let's put your dating coach hat on. I have a few questions that I got from some of your fans when we put on social, we were having you on. So for anybody out there that's newly going through a breakup, what sort of advice would you give them?
Spend time with friends. And because, like, when you go through a really intense breakup, what's actually happening is, like, you're going into, like, a little bit of an identity crisis, you know, in your relationships, your partner becomes a huge part of your identity. And then when you lose that, you lose part of yourself. And so you need to take time and, like, rebuild that identity for yourself, like, rediscover who you are, on your own terms. And the best people to kind of support you in doing that are like old friends and other people who are close to you, family members, things like that.
All right. And then those ones out there who are single, who maybe want to get in a relationship, but they can't maybe seem to find the right person. What advice would you have for those people?
Oh man, I'm trying to think of, like, one thing. Like, there's a whole laundry
list. It's so loaded.
Yeah, I'm sure, I'm sure we've got plenty of single boys there. So just load up, man. Load up. I'm writing notes.
I mean, I guess if you feel like you're perpetually single and can't really, like, get somebody, it's probably one of two things. One is either you're looking in the wrong places, which is, like, you're trying to be with somebody who, not because you're actually interested in them, but because you feel like you should be interested in them. So the classic example here is, like, you know, the young guy who, like, thinks he should date the hottest girl at his school just because she's hot. And it's like, well, you actually don't have anything in common with her. You don't have anything to talk about. Like, you don't even spend time doing the same things or with the same people. So, of course, it's never going to work. I think a lot of young people approach dating from a point of, like, validation, from, like, trying to simply make themselves, like, assure themselves that they're liked and that they can be loved. And that's, like, a horrible way to approach a relationship. It's, in fact, that, like, repels people away from you. The appropriate way is to simply say, like, these are the things that I care about in my life. This is what's important to me, and I want to find somebody to share that with. And when you're going out and meeting people if they don't share that, like if they're not, they, if they don't have the same values or interests that align with yours, then you don't try to force it. You just let it go.
There you go. All the gents listening.
There you go,
just
boys.
Got some free advice from the master. All right, Mark, just before we move on, I had a note actually just to ask you about one of your articles, which I found really useful, was Disease of Moore. And you wrote about Pat Riley just explaining what happens after a team wins a championship. And what I wanted to ask you is, I think it might be like kind of relatable in life too. As we get more successful, we kind of, our priorities change and, you know, our hunger changes as well. What do you think of that?
I think it's just important to keep in perspective, you know, like what I talk about in the article is that it's an inherent part of human nature to always want more of something. And I guess the point that I try to make is that we need to get, like, be very clear and honest with ourselves, like what that something is going to be. Because, you know, the example that comes from Pat Riley and the NBA teams, like he coined the term Disease of Moore, which he coached a couple NBA championship teams. And he found that, like, once the team won the championship, all the players, they started wanting more money. They started wanting more commercials, endorsements. They wanted to go to more parties. And they wanted more playing time. And he said that this actually undermined the team and prevented them from, like, winning more championships. So it was, like, the same ambition and drive that got them to the championship that also prevented them from winning more of them. And so it's like, I think we all do that to a certain extent in different areas of our lives. We all feel like we should be working on doing more, having more, making more. But that constant desire can actually undermine us if we're not careful. And so we need to get like very clear about like what are we motivated for? You know, like what do we actually want to work towards?
What do you do for sorts of, like, one of my friends is a stand-up, so he writes a lot, and he was telling me that there's no such thing as writer's block, and he said that, and then he went into telling a story about what he does to spark his creativity. Are there any things that you do, or is it something that comes to you and you just put it on paper? Any sort of creative insights on that?
One thing I've learned over the years is that it's better to write a page full of shit than to like not write anything at all because at least like when you have a bunch of crap, there's usually a few nuggets of gold in there that you can like build off of. Like nothing is good the first time it comes out. And so I think a lot of people who are less experienced at writing, they're putting a lot of pressure on themselves to do an article or a book. Like they have this vision in their head of like this amazing piece that they want to create. And then when they start writing it's not that, they get very discouraged and anxious and they stop. And what I've learned is just like, whatever, just accept the first draft of everything sucks and just accept that. And it's better to just get it out and then worry about like revising it and printing it up later. You know, you can always throw it out too. Like there's no reason, there's no gun to your head saying you have to publish everything you write. Like, so it's better to just push it all out.
Okay. Some really interesting insights. I'm going to use that in my writing now. All right, Mark, to wrap things up, we've got personality round, Matt. We've got four questions that we ask every guest, and we're just going to get a bit of insights into the personality of Mark Manson. So Johnny's got the first question.
All right, Mark, everybody is really into, you know, good days and rituals. We like to ask the question to the contrary. When you're having a bad day or you're in a funk, what sort of things that help you get out of that, or insight or advice to our listeners on overcoming that type of adversity?
Scotch.
Neater on the rocks.
What's your drink, man? What's your brand?
On the rocks. Actually, I'm a bourbon guy.
Yeah? Jim Beam?
Yeah, Jim Beam's okay. I drink a lot of Makers.
Makers, okay, for sure. Old fashions.
Rock. Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny, man. I always feel bad when I kind of get asked these questions because I'm like so not like one of these productivity hack people. Like, yeah, if I'm having a bad day, man, I just fucking pour myself a drink. Like
Ron Burgundy.
Put on a movie, like just forget about it.
All right, next one, we're going to take you back to your childhood. Now, Mark, what posters was on your wall growing up?
Dude, definitely like heavy metal bands, like rock bands, heavy metal bands, like Nirvana, Metallica,
yeah, nice.
Pantera. Yeah.
It's not my brother, is exactly the same.
Yeah.
If Mark Manson, if three of your closest friends were in a room and you weren't in the room, what sort of things would they be saying about you?
They'd probably be making fun of me. For like some stupid thing I did the night before. No, in all seriousness, they'd probably be saying really good things. If it came to that, let's say it's my funeral, you know, like they'd say that I was like a really smart guy, good guy, giving. But yeah, one of the things I appreciate about my friends, my really close friends, is that like, nothing changes the relationship, you know, no amount of like, doesn't matter which country I'm in, how successful my book is, like how much money I'm making, like whatever. I'm still like, they still take the piss out of me. So.
Nah, that's cool. All right, last question. You're gonna be hosting a private dinner party. Now you've got 5 invites. The only rule is it can't be any family or friends, but it can be anyone dead or alive. Now who are you inviting?
Oh man. Let's see. I would invite Miles Davis, Napoleon, Abraham Lincoln, Shakespeare, and Jesus would be the cook.
Attaboy. Mark, we really appreciate your time. We appreciate you sharing the space with us. For our listeners and your fans listening, where could the people continue to follow your journey and your progress?
Head over to markmanson.net, and both my books are available on Amazon. You can check them out, Subtle Art, Not Giving a Fuck, and Models Attract Women Through Honesty.
Awesome. Well, Mark, thanks so much for your time. Let us know when you're closer to that release date on the book, and we'll get you back on for sure, man.
Sounds good.
And guys, that was Mark Manson.
Yeah, dude, very multidimensional, layered. You look at a person, and this is kind of a microcosm of what happens to me when we bring on writers, entrepreneurs, athletes. You kind of just read their body of work, and initially for me, I'll have that kind of put them under an umbrella.
Mm-hmm.
And then what the show allows myself to do is just open up and, you know, break down that barrier. I guess you could call it, tunnel vision initially when you talk to a guy, and then you see he has so many different levels.
Yeah, hell yeah. So many executionable insights and, you know, things that we can all kind of apply to our everyday life as well. One message before we actually leave, I'm sure we're going to put this more onto the wrap-up show, was when he was just talking about the relationship with his parents. And one quote I did write from just analyzing the actual episode was, accept the imperfections of everyone else.
Yeah, it's those little imperfections that make it beautiful, right? You know, it's those little imbalances, and nothing's perfect. No one's perfect. And I guess when you realize that, don't expect yourself to be, then the perspective starts shifting into understanding and empathy and love, and then the real growth could then begin.
Definitely. So let's leave you on that point. I'm sure me and Johnny will expand on that on the Friday wrap-up. So remember to keep supporting the cause. On Wednesday, we've got Laird Hamilton, big wave surfer, probably the best big wave surfer of all time. Some say maybe the greatest surfer of all time.
Yeah, Laird Hamilton, surfer innovator. He's the guy years ago who looked at the surfer surfing the waves and was like, screw this coastline shit. Let's jump in a watercraft and go out deep and hit those big waves. So he kind of changed the whole game, and his body of work and what he's doing now. Tristan and I are really excited to share his story too.
Yeah, I can't wait to get him on. So guys, remember to subscribe via iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher. Please leave us a 5-star review. Get in touch on social, tag us in posts, and send us quick emails.
Yeah, continue to support us, support the show. JohnnyStofko.com, Johnny on all socials, Tristan Cannell.
And I'm TristanCannellFitness.com and Tristan Cannell Fitness across all my social medias. So get in touch.
Yeah, man.
We'll see you Wednesday.
Peace.
Welcome to the Vision Board Podcast, stories of success from around the world.
You guys are scratching an itch, and that's why this podcast has become popular and successful, is because you guys are scratching an itch. You're enjoying it, and you're also benefiting from the knowledge that people are dropping.
I've never met the person in my life, including my parents, that was able to outwill me about me.
whatever profession you're in, you need to keep working hard at it. You know, nothing comes easy these days, and you know, you'll get knocked down, but get back up, that counts, so just keep working hard at it.
You know, you guys said you do stuff, you ask things that aren't Googleable. You guys are two for two.
There's never been a time in my life where anybody ever was able to tell me who I was more than I knew who I was.
To join our vision and follow the journey, please subscribe to the Vision Board Podcast via iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher.